Morena, good morning. Just let me get myself organised here. Let's start with prayer. Father, we want your will above everything else. We are not just asking you to bless whatever plan we devise. We want your wisdom. We want to move by your direction and in your timing. Please guide our thoughts and keep our hearts turned to yours. Amen. Well, when Andrew asked me to do a presentation on the draft strategic plan document, I was quite excited to take up the opportunity. I love a good strategic plan. But I would hazard a guess that it really doesn't interest many of you. I imagine there were very few of you who jumped out of bed this morning and said, I'm so looking forward to what Meryn has to say about the St. James draft strategic plan. Hurry up, let's not be too late to church today. However, you are here. So my hope is that today you leave understanding a bit more about why we as a church need a planning document like this and how it's going to be useful to us. With that in mind, let me tell you the purpose of our time here this morning. After I speak this morning, I hope you are going to be able to do the following things. I hope you'll be able to identify the questions that are used in strategic planning. I hope you'll be able to identify the parts of the strategic planning process, and you'll also walk away knowing the components of a strategic plan, and then you'll be able to relate them to the piece of paper that you got as you came in the door. It's important to say, first off, that there are a number of different models used for producing strategic plans. I've experienced different ones, and I'm sort of honing them together into sort of one master model, but the one that I'm using at the moment for this particular document is called the driver's model, and you'll hear me talk a little bit about that today as we go through some of the parts. But the fact is that many of us have already had the experience of strategic planning in our daily lives, probably without even realising it. Any time there is a gap between where you are and where you want to be, strategic planning can provide you with the tools that you need to bridge that gap. One of the most common scenarios is the process of buying a house. So, I want you to imagine for a moment that Neil and I are going to buy a house. Shush from the cheap seats. If you've ever been to our house, you'll recognise that this is hypothetical but probably quite possibly required. Right, anyway, I'm going to walk through the questions we might ask ourselves during this process, which really is just strategic planning. So the planning process focuses on four core strategic questions, starting with, where are we today? And I do apologise if you can't see the words on that. Toby and I tried to make it as big as we possibly can, but I'll read it out to you anyway. So with this house buying example, Neil and I would start by looking at the strengths and weaknesses of the home in which we are living, as shown in this table. So in the list of strengths, we live in a very convenient neighbourhood for schools. Our kids can pretty much bike or walk to all the schools. We have a pretty good section size. We can fit a trampoline on it. And it's a particularly sunny section. However, there are some weaknesses. We do have a garage that's a bit like a sieve. There isn't enough room now. And this is actually a description of the house, not Neil and I. Starting to show its age, things inside and outside are starting to be needing replacing or repairing. So after understanding where you are, the next step is to understand where you want to be. In this step, you can create the vision of the future. So where do my family and I want to be? Well, our vision, we're bringing up four boys in a house with one bathroom. You can imagine the first words from my mouth. I want a separate toilet. Then it's Neil's turn. I want my house to have a watertight garage. And what do the kids want? Well, I didn't actually ask them, but I'd hazard a guess since we went rock climbing yesterday, they probably want a rock climbing wall in their house. But we'll have to settle on a games room. So once you've created your vision, you're ready to turn to defining your drivers, the actions you'll take to drive your success. Your drivers have to do two important things. First, the reason you are where you are is because there are certain barriers standing between you and your vision. Your drivers must break through those barriers. For us, the barriers could be pretty steep. We feel that a house that we are seeking to buy could possibly be in the 500k price bracket. Selling a house and buying another one is expensive. It could cost us up to $20,000 for tidying up our house, advertising, builders' reports, lawyers' fees, and so on. So that 20k could be a major barrier standing in the way of us achieving our vision. We could dream about the house we wanted. We could search Trade Me and Open to View for it. We could even go and find it and knock on the door. However, until we overcome that $20,000 barrier, the house would most likely never be ours. A second barrier for us could be related to our expensive grocery shop each week. To feed our lot costs about the equivalent of a small mortgage per year. Definitely another barrier. Along with overcoming barriers, the drivers must also address the critical success factors, and these up on that slide there, I put up there as CSF. These are key conditions that must be created to achieve our vision. I'd like to think that the CSFs are the fuel that propels the driver of the rocket to the vision. With your critical success factors, you can overcome the barriers and create key conditions to achieve your vision. For Neil and I, a key condition could be to find a house that somebody wanted to sell, that has the features we desire, in a neighbourhood we want to live, at a price we can afford, all at the same time. In essence, we would have overcome two barriers. If we can overcome the two barriers, the associated costs of selling and buying a new house and hemorrhaging money at the supermarket, but if we haven't created the critical conditions, finding a suitable home, then we're not going to be successful. So, with barriers and critical success factors identified, we're now ready to focus on the drivers. What are the things that we're going to do to overcome the barriers and create those successful conditions? We could implement a savings plan to target $200 in savings per month, so we could minimise takeaways, we could limit unnecessary spending. We could take on more work, I could take on more contract work, Neil could take on more gigs. We could write and stick to a meal plan when we go grocery shopping. And we could view 8 open homes per month. There is one more driver that we have to put in place that is more important than any of the others, and that driver is the monitoring driver. The purpose of the monitoring driver is to track the progress of all other drivers. So going back to our plan for the new home, we might do our monitoring on the first Sunday of every month at 6 p.m. At that time, all activities in our household would stop and we would ask ourselves a series of questions. First, how much money did we save this month? We saved $250. Great. How much did we get from the extra jobs? Another $300. Wonderful. How's the supermarket shopping going? The monthly bill was down 10%. Fantastic. How many homes did we look at this month? 5. Why only 5? What was the problem? The real estate agent wasn't available and sometimes wouldn't return our calls. As you can imagine, we need to find a new real estate agent. We have a plan and she's getting in the way. That's hypothetical to all you real estate agents. So, monitoring is critical to ensure that you stay on track. Monitoring also allows you to make adjustments along the way as you learn new information, encounter new barriers, or identify other critical success factors. But perhaps most importantly, monitoring keeps you motivated. Typically, it takes considerable effort to move from where you are today to where you want to be. The monitoring process helps keep your vision in front of you and give you the continual motivation needed to keep implementing your drivers. So there you go. If you've ever been involved in buying a house, you've already experienced strategic planning. Now we're going to move on to the strategic planning process. Any effective process covers several key principles for effectively planning any activity. With any activity, you need to start with purpose. Why are we doing this? With the house example, our purpose was to find a house that was more suitable to our needs. Purpose always answers the question, why? For St. James, the purpose is twofold. As Andrew said last week, we have an urgency behind this document because we need it in order to apply for things like repairing the landslip, fixing the roof, and funding for missions, such as the work Colleen is doing with our children and her youth. However, the importance behind this document is that as a congregation, we really do need for us to have greater clarity concerning what we believe God is calling us to. Thanks, Toby. Number two, start with an accurate assessment of where you are today. You should always start with an accurate assessment of where you are today. Why is that important? Because you may think you have overcome certain barriers when really you haven't. Perhaps an example will illustrate the importance of starting with an accurate picture of today. Let's say that you wanted to drive across New Zealand from New Plymouth on the west coast to Gisborne on the east coast. You would have to drive east to get there. But what if your perception was that you were in New Plymouth, but in reality you were already on the east coast, except way up in Tauranga? What happens when you drive east? You might end up a little wet, which is probably not part of your vision. So, we might clearly create a compelling vision of where we want to be. However, if we don't clearly define where we are today, we may end up thinking we're outside certain barriers. As a result, we can end up doing the wrong things and not getting the result we want. Therefore, the second principle is that we must start with an accurate assessment of where we are today. Once you have an accurate picture of today, then you can create a shared vision. Not just a vision, but a shared vision. You could probably imagine what would happen if Neil and I had different visions of the type of home we wanted. Can you imagine the struggle along the way? Because we would want different things and pull in different directions, many of the decisions we make along the way would result in major fights over whose vision would prevail. By creating a shared vision, we have up front, we have the fight only once. Once the vision is created, we are able to make decisions together in line with achieving that vision. In many churches, there are entire groups of people who have different visions of where the church needs to be. Imagine the chaos when each group goes off in a different direction. And sometimes those different directions are mutually exclusive. If one is successful, the other has to fail. What a waste, all resulting from a lack of a shared vision. So with a shared vision defined, the fourth principle is that you can then focus on identifying the major barriers to achieving that vision. Ask yourself, why haven't we achieved our vision already? What's standing in our way? What's keeping us from where we are, keeping us where we are today? Then you must isolate the critical success factors. What's critical to getting to where you want to be? What are the conditions that, if you create them, will drive achievement of the vision? After identifying your barriers and critical success factors, the fifth principle is to define those drivers. What are the key strategies that are going to get you to your vision? And in a good strategic plan, those strategies will address each of the barriers and each of the critical success factors. Principle six, you monitor your progress to stay on track and motivated to achieve your vision. And finally, number seven, you need to be sure to have rewards and consequences to build accountability. Even with the monitoring process, if there's no formal accountability, people quickly learn that their attention to the drivers is not required. So now we've looked at the strategic planning process conceptually. Let's focus on the document that resulted from the planning process for us here at St. James. And hopefully when you've walked in, you've been given a piece of paper that looks a little bit like that. Is there anyone who doesn't have one? Would like one? No? There are bigger versions if you're finding it hard to see the smaller writing. Okay, so what I want to do to finish off this section today is I want to just walk through each of the components of the draft strategic plan and focus on how all these bits stick together. Okay, so what you've got in front of you is like a summary page of all the essential bits. So the first thing is that if you have a look at the bottom of the page, you will see our purpose. And sometimes this is called a mission. And it's generally a statement of the overall purpose of an organisation that describes what you want to do, for whom, and the benefit. So it should answer those three questions. What do you do? For whom are you doing it? And what is the benefit? So our proposed St James mission statement needs to answer these succinctly. What do? We minister to, encourage, and inspire. For whom? All who gather with us. What's the benefit? So that they may know and enjoy God, speak about Jesus, and live graciously. The second answer to where are we today is our values. Values are general guidelines that set the foundation for how we as an organisation are going to operate. But we can actually gain a greater benefit by transforming our values into guiding principles. So if you were to read sort of the bigger document that sits underneath this, which Andrew's going to go through parts of in the next couple of weeks, you will see that we have vision, we have six values: God honouring, Jesus-centred, Holy Spirit-enabled, relationship-focused, outwardly-oriented, and Bible-based. But alongside them, we've also described the behaviours that you would expect to see with us. So for an example, with God honouring, because we believe that God is love, that's the value, this means that we are motivated to be a people of integrity, compassion, and moral courage. Because sometimes values end up being stuck on the wall and they look great, but they're actually not being worked out through the activities within an organisation. So that's why we're going to connect the values with the behaviours. And the final question of where we are today is the outcome areas. Now, the outcome are areas where we need to be successful in order to fulfil our mission. And it's really the difference that we want to make, the difference we want our work to make. So again, it's a bit like who benefits and what is the benefit. And it's got to be based on results, not on activities. So for an example, we've got here as one of the outcomes, and you'll see this on the left-hand side of your page underneath or beside the word our outcomes, is to provide dynamic worship. So that's what we want to do, but the reason we want to do that and the difference we want to make is so that all who gather with us are inspired in their life of faith. So we're not just looking at our activities, but we're looking at the difference that those activities make. Does that make sense? Yep. I've just explained my notes without even going through my notes. Excellent. Then we move on to the question of where we want to be. And this is the draft version of the vision that the session and people who came along to the strategy sessions, we've sort of pulled it all together. So let me just say beforehand that there is a difference between a mission statement, which is at the bottom of that page, and the vision statement, which is at the top. While a mission statement explains the overall purpose of the organisation, what you do, for whom you do it, and the benefit, the vision statement answers the question, if the organisation fulfils its mission, what will the future look like? So our proposed St James 1 is those who gather with us are the mission statement is those who gather with us are ministered to, encouraged, and inspired so that they may know and enjoy God and speak about Jesus and live graciously. So if we're successful at fulfilling our mission, what will our future look like? Well, hopefully, we will be a church that bears faithful witness to Jesus Christ, cares for one another, gives testimony to the work of God in our lives, prays for our world, and serves our community. And the final question that we've answered, or tried to answer, is the how do we get there bit. Strategic priorities are the activities required to achieve the vision. The big strategic planning questions are worthless if they don't result in a few clear, compelling strategic initiatives that strengthen the church. So your strategies are your drivers, the things that you actually do to achieve your outcomes. The most important outcome for the first part of the strategic planning process is to identify the most important priorities for a church. You could start with a long list of potential priorities, and the session has done this, and they can discuss the relative value of each, and then you need to hone it down so that you've got just the key priorities. Now, hopefully, when this happens in a planning process, this type of discussion leads to a greater clarity about the big strategic planning questions, especially about what the church should do best. No church can be everything to everyone. So we need to think about what makes us at St. James special. So once we've got a list of no more than about 3 to 5 priorities and that's agreed on, then you can come up with the one-liner statement. And in this case, we've got a one-liner statement for our worship line, which talks about the fact that we want to curate worship which honours God, is inspiring and accessible to a wide range of people. Now, during that planning phase, many churches settle for a long list of priorities. They could have 20 or 30 things that they think are what they should be doing. But this has the benefit, this has the benefit that nobody feels excluded or insulted, it makes it very unlikely that anything's ever going to get done because there's just too much, it's just too wide. So what we've done is we've tried to trim it down to just the 5 particular strategies, the priority strategies. And then finally, measures. We need to have some measure of the accomplishment of an outcome over a specific period. And we need to be careful that the measure is appropriate for the outcome and that we're measuring results, not activities. And they need to be realistic and they need to be attainable. It's no good having a measure that is completely beyond our reach. So, for example, it's no good having a measure that we're going to fill our place with 400 people every Sunday. Perhaps I'm being a bit unfaithful there, Andrew. Perhaps my faith is too small. But do you know what I mean? You have to have a measure that's going to be realistic to show progress as you're moving through. So this is an example. It's actually not in the document because we probably need to tailor them a little bit better. But one of our possible measures could be to increase the number of members who are inspired to participate in our worship services during 2020. Okay, so putting it all together, you get that document which is in front of you, which really is a lot of words. So what I like to do, because I'm a visual learner, thanks Toby, is to look at it from the point of view of a diagram. And we're almost finished. So what we've got here is we've got a diagram, and if you can imagine that your vision is what you're heading towards, so that's that thing in the centre. Around the outside, the blue circles are the outcomes. So for us, our outcomes are to provide dynamic worship so that all who gather with us are inspired in their life of faith, so that all who gather with us feel accepted and able to grow in authentic relationships with others. That's the inclusive fellowship one. For discipleship development, all who gather with us are able to assisted to flourish in their relationship with God. Emphasis on sharing the gospel, all who gather with us feel ready to share their faith in Jesus with others. And bearing witness, others will know that God cares about them in the world. So that would go into those blue circles. Then the things that move us towards our vision would be those key strategies. So that would be what is in the third box on your piece of paper. Now, all of this is on the base of values, because if we don't have values about how we're going to do it, then all our good work will be done for nothing, really. Okay, and we haven't got mission statement there, but actually your mission statement really determines what you choose to do and what you choose not to do. It gives you a decision-making capacity because it allows you to say, yes, this will move us closer to our vision, so we will go ahead and do it, whereas this opportunity is a great opportunity, but it's not going to move us any closer to our vision. Okay, so the mission is really the whole picture combined. So I have drawn out one that's a bit bigger. So I really encourage you, if we find a place to put that, I don't know where we'll put it, but if we find a place to put that, to write on it. If you come in and you think about something that you feel you want changed or you feel you want added to it, we've got challenges on one side. I know the biggest challenges we've got at the moment probably are the fact that we've got a leaky roof and a slip behind the hall. But there might be other challenges that you can think of that are stopping us from moving forward. There are also things that are supporting us. I don't know whether you've read some of the documentation around the Presbyterian Church in New Zealand, but it's not necessarily happy reading. We've got many parishes who have got very low numbers of children and very low numbers of people attending, whereas we seem to be able to have a large number of children coming in on a regular basis. So there are a lot of good things that we're doing that we need to continue to do also. Thanks, Toby. So finally, I want to just leave you this morning with this verse. I know that there's always a danger in taking verses out of the Bible out of context, but I really like this verse because it encouraged me that we're on the right track writing these plans down. And the Lord answered me, write the vision, make it plain on tablets, that he who reads it may run. Thank you very much.